Blog Talk Radio.
I knew it had a hard ending. Welcome, everyone, to Headliners Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's catalog of work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night callers. I am your host, Jeremy F., and I am joined by my lovely, talented, and for the fourth year in a row, the Spelling Bee of Lower Midlothian County champ, Pam Ray. Pam, how are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty great, but you've obviously never seen my spelling without the help of spell check.
I can only assume. I've decided I'm going to award you a new moniker every week with some kind of unforeseen talent that none of the rest of the audience knows except for you and myself.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. I like it. But I'm looking forward to tonight's show. hanging out with you, another cool piece. So awesome.
Right on. I am with you. And tonight is going to be quite a treat because I got two incredible poets that I wasn't incredibly familiar with until we signed them up. So they were highly recommended, and I want to welcome them to the show. First of all, Spaceship Captain, is she with us?
Hi.
She is, yes. Welcome, Chloe. Glad you could be here.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here.
Well, I've enjoyed reading your set list, Chloe, Spaceship Captain, and I can't wait to have a deep discussion about what you gave us. This is going to be a good show. And also with us is Jack Otterberg. Is Jack with us?
He said, I don't know why, but he said he had to call back later. So, you know, I don't know what later meant, whether it meant the second hour or what, but, you know, he's welcome to call back whenever he wants.
Okay, well, we will wait with bated breath. And do we have anything else that's joining us tonight?
You know, I just sent, we have, yes, we have the Drip with us. So welcome, Drip. Glad you could join us.
I am ridiculously excited for this show. I can't even tell you. I've been drinking since 2, and I would have been excited for this regardless.
Oh.
Awesome.
Right on. We've all been drinking since 2, Britt. So I'm stoked that you're with us. This is going to be a great show. And so without any further ado, Spaceship, if you are ready, I'm going to go ahead and put your first poem up. And that's not it. So let me try again.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably not.
Sorry, for once again, I've learned that these dead silences during the shows do wonders for our ratings. There you go. How about that? Am I putting off some sort of vibe? Whenever you're ready.
There we go. All right. The pale band embossed into the skin on his finger is a tattoo that reads divorced, and the tired bruises neath his eyes chime in with children. He's making some polite conversation, turning my camera over in his hands, and I am returning it, although really, we are sizing each other up like sitting cobras about to do a deadly dance. The air in the photo lab is thick, and though I do not dislike the attention, he is at least 10 to 12 years my senior, if I am making a conservative estimate. My eyes flick from divorce to with children. I want to be angry with him, you see, but he doesn't know he's the fifth man in half as many weeks within that exact demographic to stumble through an invite to dinner. And now my practiced eyes search for those near invisible bandits on ring fingers, and my tired brain wonders what it is about me that is so appealing to only men who have been recently cast off. He thumbs the film advance lever of my camera, nervously dry-firing it several times before handing it back to me, each shutter click hitting me in the gut like live ammunition. And I briefly imagine those large flat hands hot, curled around the small of my back. I make a polite excuse and smile, cramming my negatives into my bag and hoping he forgets the whole silly ordeal by the next time a pretty fool with a vintage camera walks through his door. End of poem.
What a great start. I love this poem. And Drip, would you like to start us off with comments?
I feel like it would be unfair to go first. I want some people to chime in because I Spaceship Captain happens to be a personal friend of mine. Yeah. So I don't want to color other people's opinions.
He knows all
I would
the,
like to wait a little bit.
Fair.
I adore everything
fair.
About this.
You can pass. You can pass. We can come back to you.
I
Cam,
pass.
Do you want to start off?
I feel like I've been thrown under the bus. No, I think this is absolutely wonderful. I love the humor in it. The bite, the straightforward language, it's got a wonderful modern feel that I feel like I think is really relatable to anybody who has had to deal with single life, you know, and now I guess my first question I would ask would be now, are you the type of poet that writes what Do you, like, is it a mixture of fiction and truth or 100% truth? Do you do truth with a, like, poetic liberties taken? So how's your approach in that way for most of your poetry and this one in particular?
It varies poem to poem. I would say most of my poems are typically rooted in truth, embellished with fiction. and you know, some of them are complete bullshit.
Well, I get that. Very cool. And I have to say, I really like this all the way through, but, you know, it's that imagery of we are sizing each other up like spitting cobras about to do a deadly dance. And then the other one is, and now his practiced eyes search for those near invisible bandits or ring fingers, and my tired brain wonders what it is about me that is so appealing to only men who have been recently cast off. Very strong lines and well done.
And yeah, I mean, that's exactly my feel too. I mean, as I was going through your body of work, that's what I wanted to understand too. I mean, because I can read it in a couple different voices. First of all, I kind of want to, on behalf of all the creepy men out there, I want to say, ooh, you guys are just gross, because this gave me the heebie-jeebies. I mean, it just is a situation that I'm just like, God, gals do have to deal with that kind of crap, and it's just kind of gross. But then I didn't know how autobiographical to take a lot of your words, because in reading your body of work, I do see that fluctuation. I mean, this one felt very real to me. It felt like an embellished encounter that you really felt. But then if I really started digging into it, especially because of the setting, and I took the camera that you have in the second, and then you came back to it at the end, I thought there was specific significance to that. So if I was dealing with a metaphor, then my mind started going to a different space about what this encounter was really about. So knowing that you do take that license and this is based on some sort of truth, it helps me even greater appreciate the fact that you were able to take a lot of your inner voice and bring that humor, like what Pam said, and kind of make it more fantastical. So your muse can come from what I can gather, can come from anything that happens in your every day. And so without any more delay, I'm dying to hear what Britt has to say and what the backstory is on this sucker.
I think without giving too much of that away, I really, really appreciate that second to last stanza. He thumbs the film advanced lever of my camera, nervously dry firing it several times before handing it back to me, each other click hitting me in the gut like live ammunition. That, I don't know a single woman that hasn't experienced that to some degree. And to put it here in this context, am I putting off some sort of vibe that older man is into you vibe, that maybe he's got kids and he's looking for some sort of answer vibe, that I'm so into the pause and acknowledgement of that. And whether it is or not, you know, who knows? Who knows about that guy? You would know about that guy, Chloe. But I'm so into the complete dissection of this impossibly small moment. I mean, he had your camera for what, like 30 whole seconds, and the writer's brain just goes fucking nuts. I love that. I love that.
Thank you. I don't know, not to throw Britt under the bus here at all, but I don't know if you guys know that Britt is the one who really encouraged me to share my poetry on All Poetry at all in the first place. Before it was, you know, confined to so many composition books and anonymous and vague Instagram posts. So, you know, big, just, you know, small shout out to Britt here for actually, you know, introducing me to All Poetry, and you lot as well. I truly would not be here without the drip. So,
lies. Little, you would have gotten here regardless.
The drip has become motivation for us all, that's for sure. And I see that Jack is now with us. Jack, do you want to comment on this poem, or would you like to catch up on the next one?
Oh, I love this poem. I read this poem by Spaceship Captain. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm like an old grandpa of technology. I'll say that first. But this poem, it did give me, like you said, Jeremy, it did give me the, like, heebie-jeebies, but and it was just so descriptive, but, like, also maintaining a conversational tone. That's what I like about it. It's kind of like balance between conversation and imagery. Because I know personally for me, sometimes I get stuck in imagery, and I really admire how Spaceship Captain really just knows the balance well. And personally, I also like to thank The Drip for being a great motivator too, but those are my comments, and I'm wowed.
Very cool comments.
Say that I know the good, like, I don't know where you put your money on horses, but you should give me the money instead. I know the goods.
We have Spaceship Captain. We have your next poem up whenever you're ready.
All right. These back-to-back might have been... No, it's cool. It's good. Okay. There were days when I craved nothing more in a mate than a man who was bland, something simple and inoffensive that would dissolve on my tongue like an oyster cracker or a piece of toast would. Or so I told myself. You see, though those days seemed to leave me readily, and those cholera diet men offend my roiling acid stomach as though they were raw meat. And as if I were pedaling backwards through life, I find my mind abandons dairy farms and mossy brooks in favor of white hot furnaces, places where bricks and blown glass are made, smithereys, crematoriums, places where sweat slicks back, fingers grip iron. And there I molded hot, viscous, mouthful of cinnamon and orange juice running down my chin, citric acid, promising to boil my insides and turn my stomach. And as I retch, up comes oyster crackers and toast, mixing with the iron filings and glass all over the floor.
I love this one. I love this one. And what I really dug about it is the build. It starts off with something so bland, something so soft, and something that there is no emotion, purposefully no taste, no emotion, no connection with. And then by the end, you even come back to it, but you come back to the oyster crackers with a lot more vengeance. And so that build through the whole thing happens. But it's not only in the mood. I mean, I can even tell it in your read. I mean, your pace picked up, the intensity picked up, and it's just natural, I think, because of the content. But beyond the content and the direction of it, I also noticed that you got more fantastical with your vocabulary, and I loved it. I loved the fact that you got into smithereens and crematoriums and then to cinnamon, viscous. I mean, just beautiful words that are so fun to say. And it helped that growth in the poem. I thought it was kind of a subtle little way of helping speed up or intensify is a better word, intensify the feeling and emotion of the poem. So I'm going to take a stab, and I could be way off, and it's okay. Is this one meant to be talking about chasing bad boys? Is that what the thing is? That's what the theme is?
Yeah, it kind of is. I wrote this poem during lockdown, during COVID, and so it was half that, it was half, you know, am I going to work this office job and date milquetoast men just so that it's easy, or, you know, am I going to do things that are objectively a bad decision but more fun? and this is sort of a taking, you know, taking the piss out of myself too is, you know, why do I do this? I'm puking on myself, you know? But to your comment about the language, I wanted the last stanza in particular to feel like your mouth was full of the words when you're reading it. So where you get words like viscous, cinnamon, you know, citric, you kind of have to chew on those words. And so I guess compositionally wise, that's where that choice comes from. But yeah, I mean, I think this one is pretty in your face as far as writer's intention goes. I think I kind of laid it all out on this one.
That's okay. Sometimes we need to have the writer's intention right in front of our nose to help us follow along. No, I loved it. Jack, what are your thoughts?
I honestly, it reminded me of this quote by Theodore Rufke or something when I was reading about advice on poetry. How like poetry is like always has to be in motion. I think I'm paraphrasing it, but I heard about it. It's like poetry moves across the page, basically. And that's what this poem reminded me of. And, you know, it's always easy to think, like, when you look at the page, like, it's hard for it to jump out of you, but when you read it, it, like, comes more to life. And I thought this poem, like, maintained both. It jumps out of you while you're reading it and when it was just on the page. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Very, very cool comment. Mm-hmm. Brittany, what would you like to say?
I hate to come off as redundant, but one of my favorite things about your work, Chloe, and I don't know that I've actually ever said this to you live. I'm sure I've told you over an amalgamation of comments over the last X amount of years, but you have this ability, and it's not a common one, where you can lead me by the hand very gently, very nonchalant, and then in one swift motion show me something fantastic and then swoop me right back to that normal-ass walk. And that's what that last stanza is for me, where I feel like what's the word I'm looking for? When you're a pedestrian, there you go. Like, it's this relatively normal-ass walk until you give me that last stanza, which is just so juicy. And you show me that like it's nothing. There's no ceremony, pomp, or circumstance, and then you pull me right back. And that's one of my favorite qualities about your work.
So
if I've never told you before, there you go.
Wow. I feel like you've just undressed me on live TV.
We all have faces for radio, so don't feel bad about it.
Hey, Pam, for yourself.
Pam, what are your comments? Pam, you with us still?
You know what? I'm on mute. Yes, I am with you. All right. I liked this poem, the use of oyster crackers. I have to say, I really enjoyed how you did, as you pointed out. You had a lot of those C and S words, which I think make for great sounds. I really like the end, not only for the C and S sounds, but also because you bring in not only imagery, but you bring in like mouthfeel and taste. And there's very so much here that, like when you mentioned roiling acid stomach as though they were raw meat, you know, you can just, it's so horrible the way I suddenly feel raw meat in my mouth as I read that line. But it's a testament to the poem itself, because I think when you can read something and, you know, feel that, you know, it says something. So I think this is an amazing write and very well done.
Thank you.
What a great comment. Like I told you, Spaceship, if you want to deviate, we always can. I have your next poem ready, Auroras. So if you want to deviate from your set list at any point, just let me know, okay? We can do that.
Yeah, more or less, I think we're okay with it. I have the one that I want to swap out, but it's just a little further down the way. So,
yeah, I got your note on that. I got your note. Whenever you want to do that, we can do that one too.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, we'll go on with Aurora.
You're up.
a wall of ice that auroras dance behind, the green and blue, my ancestors, watching over me as I carry my sling and spear. The cold wind whips my face, it croons and whispers, the sweet moans and whines it carries, caribou, calling over the ice field.
Ooh, you're up, Jack. What are your thoughts on this one?
I don't know, it's just the imagery. I don't know, I'm sounding so redundant, but I'm a big fan of imagery. And especially like the last line, I didn't hear all of it because I tried to mute myself and like it was just, I just didn't want to like interfere with anything technological wise, but the last line really stuck out for me, and I think that's the key part of poems, for at least for me. I mean, every part's key in a poem, but for me, I really like ending lines, and boy, I'm impressed by, it kind of goes off what the drift said, but I'm impressed by how you end your poems a lot. Your whole poems are amazing, but I'm impressed by how the ending lines, especially in like how they vary, but they all have the same hard-hitting effect, because I think that's very important, and I'm just, yeah. I'm in awe.
Thank you. That's a good comment.
Very sweet comment. Brett, what do you think?
I'm always so impressed when people can get done in very few lines what it takes me a fucking lifetime to achieve. So that this is short and potent. It's a curled fist, and I appreciate that. But they're not like a violent one. Like, this is... It's not sweet. I don't mean to say that. It's just, it's like having your hand held and shown a history, which is nice. It's gentle but not harmless. Does that make sense?
Just how I like my men.
Yes. 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 That, but in my voice. Yes.
Great comments. Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a wonderful brevity. I have to say, I'm reading, like I'm listening to you and I'm reading this poem and I'm glancing over to the right-hand side on my Kindle Fire and I can see what contest it's for because, you know, and obviously I don't see a contest. Because to me, you know, it seems like the type of poem where you'd see a contest off the side that says, give me 10 lines or more about being a caribou hunter. So, but I mean, it's wonderfully written. I love how you bring us back in history. There's this, I like to use the phrase, you know, epic brevity, and I'm sure I didn't make it up. Someone else had to use it sometime before me, but I like that phrase because to me what it does is it's that whole idea of a brevity that tells an epic story, such as, you know, going back in time in history, going, you know, on that hunt with that person who is one with nature. And so given that I don't see a contest here, what inspired you to write a brevity about a caribou hunter in an ice field?
Yeah. So this was either at the time I was working at the museum or just after, and I kind of fostered this obsession with these Venuses, hand-carved statues of, like, the shape of women that they started making, like, tens of thousands of years ago. And I remember kind of going on just headlong dive into what were people making and why were they making it. And some of the first things that people made besides instruments were these little statues of women. And anyways, I remember talking to my grandmother about it, and she was telling me that some of our ancestors were, you know, indigenous Americans, and some of them came across on boats, and some of them they think came across on boats tens, you know, thousands of years ago, and sailed along the side of the pack ice and would get out and hunt caribou or seals along the ice. So they were sailing from France all the way to the Americas. And so just kind of talking with my grandmother about that and thinking about that and that sort of thing kind of inspired the idea of that type of, you know, early human connection of people coming to the Americas tens of thousands of years ago, and, you know, how disconnected we are from our ancestors now, but how connected to ancestry those people were. Where it came from was just a spiral of being drawn into the figurines that people were making from that time. So a lot of poetry came out of the time I was working at the museum.
Very cool.
Yeah, and Spaceship, because it's such a small poem, I go to the inches of it, right? I go to each individual move. And reading this after reading the first two, it felt this was also biographical, but it was, or autobiographical, but it was autobiographical on a whole different level than what I felt on the other two. So what I took from it, and if I'm totally wrong and you don't appreciate this, then I can easily be told to buzz off. But because you took the word ice in the first and the end, that was kind of what I took as the challenge of what this is all about. It's a wall of ice. It's over an ice field. There's this shield of hardness that is hard for you to let break through. And then it's almost an acceptance of self, because the title of the poem is Auroras. So there's this beauty behind all of it. And it's the sharing of oneself when you know that you have that inner beauty. So that's what I kind of took on all is maybe there was some greater, deeper meaning in very short measure, and I appreciated that because I felt that the moves in this were deliberate, because they had to be, because it's only an 8-line poem. So I appreciated it, and I did spend a lot of time thinking about where you're going. Now that I hear the true backstory of where it comes from, it sounds like I'm full of shit, but that's okay. Just know that your words do carry a lot of meaning when people are getting into it and loving your craft.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And before we move on to the next one, do you want to talk a little bit about where we can find your work? You had mentioned that Brittany got you to share on All Poetry. Do you have any published or any other ways that we can read your work, or is All Poetry the best place to find you?
I don't have anything published yet. Britt will know that I've been slowly but surely working on a manuscript for checked my watch. Years now, but right now All Poetry is the best place to find me, and I don't post there as often as I used to, but it's definitely the best spot for right now. Hopefully within the next, you know, year to 18 months, maybe I'll get something out there.
Are you looking at publishing, like, prose then? When you say manuscript, or are you going to publish poetry, or what are you looking at publishing?
Poetry. There's a handful of short stories that I had written when I was much younger, 17, 18, 19, that I'm kind of rewriting and toying with the idea of publishing half the short stories, half poetry. But like I said, it's very much a manuscript that's in progress.
Cool.
Right now. But it is in progress.
Well, do know that once you do get stuff out there, let us all know. There's places you can put little tags on your page here at AP so we can support you and check out your work. So.
Oh, certainly.
Absolutely. And whenever you're ready, your next one, He Draws It Out, is ready for your recitation.
Yes, this one's brand new, actually. It's in the way the E rolls off his tongue and sits lurid and lewd in his bottom lip. Like a tablespoon of honey, he draws it out a bit too much, drool bit. Makes my name sound like a filthy thing, and it hangs out in the air like lacy panties on a laundry line and from God and everybody, till I can rally the audacity to snatch it down with all the staccato what I can muster.
I like this one. Brittany, you're up.
I'm so glad that you called me first. I've not been able to give you my thoughts, my lengthy thoughts on this one, and I won't go into too much length. You know me. You know how I appreciate work like this, where it's a very, it's not just the visual. There's also a tactile feeling here. There's a feeling to be experienced on the hand, on the lips, on the tongue, and the audacity to snatch it down with the staccato what, all the staccato what I can muster is my absolute favorite thing ever, because it's so visual. I can see it. That name hanging out, just flapping in the wind and snatched. Oh, that's it is gorgeous. It is gorgeous.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I love.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. You have something? Go for it.
Yeah, I just have a question. Like, when I was first starting writing poetry, I would used to get lost in sound all the time, like just how words sounded. I got too much into it. Like, I would just write things that I thought would, for example, I just write things that I thought would sound pretty without getting meaning. So, Chloe, I was wondering, how did you find that balance between sounding very beautiful poetry, but also maintaining a meaning to it?
A lot of practice.
yeah.
For the first, and Britt can attest to this, for the first couple years that I wrote poetry, I wrote rhyme exclusively. And didn't deviate from that at all until probably nearly a year into posting on All Poetry and reading a lot more free verse and, kind of allowing myself to break from that. But I like to adhere to a sort of, kitchen sink realism, I guess. I like to try to keep, I like to try to keep things from getting too heady and keep them grounded in the beauty of what is reality. Dandelions and sidewalk cracks. I write about that a lot. That kind of imagery is something that's always drawn me. Just the beauty and the mundane. So for me, finding ways to just write the way I would talk really helped me to keep it from, getting out of my grasp. And still, sometimes it's a good practice to write both. Write something that's incredibly down to earth and then write something that's completely ethereal and, filled with flowery Shakespearean language, and then, kind of marry the two. Sometimes I write the same poem twice with different styles, and then I go, okay, how can we zipper this together and make it sound like, what I want it to sound like? But yeah, I don't know if that helps or answers your question really, but
that was a great answer. Yeah. That was in depth. Yeah.
No, and I think you brought up a lot of cool points in that answer too. I like the fact that you challenge yourself by writing in different styles, but writing the same poem two different ways to get two different feels and then zippering it together, like you said, I really like that concept. I got to try that. What I dug about this one is I like how there's a love-hate with the sensuality of it. I mean, it seemed like there was the disdain for the way he rolls the E's off his tongue. So that's someone – and I know the feeling. I hate it when someone – either says my name the wrong way or says it or gives me a nickname that drives me nuts. And I know that that's just, how it just gets under one's skin when they hear it the wrong way. And it's consistent too. When someone finds that button, if they don't know they're even pushing it, they do it through force of habit. But then this builds with, it starts with that bitter pill, but then there also seems to be, there was a sensuality and innuendo to it, and there was almost a love for it, because you say it hangs out in the air like lacy panties. You didn't have to say lacy panties on a laundry line. You could have said my dirty drawers, or you didn't have to have that little tantalizing thing that kind of makes you go, you know what, there's a lot of love hate to it, that's what I got. And then I didn't know my question was what the significance was of spacing that what at the end, because I really like that way that you emphasize the word. But then when you perform the poem, I really got what you, the, how you really punctuated it and made it tight and loud as opposed to drawn out. So I liked the way that you performed the poem, and I think that really gave it added meaning. Very cool stuff.
Thank you.
And Pam, did you have a chance to hear this one?
I didn't have a chance to hear it read, but I did actually read it earlier. And then plus I just read it right now while you guys were commenting. And yeah, this is wonderful all the way through. I really like your observation on the hate love type thing. And it really does speak on the whole idea of, you know, being attracted to somebody you don't want to be attracted to. I too was really drawn to that whole thing about those lines about it makes my name sound like a filthy thing and hangs it out in the air like lacy panties on a laundry line in front of God and everybody till I can rally the audacity to snatch it down. I mean, the whole thing is wonderful. And the use of the word staccato was a great choice. And I can just, you know, I picture this character, this woman in this poem, just stomping up to the laundry line in her, like, red high heels and, you know, tap, 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 and, you know, with a flip of the hair. I mean, it's really just wonderfully visceral imagery. And I also liked, Chloe, how you were talking about in poetry, finding the beauty in the mundane. I thought when you were talking about that, that was a really great observation on, to me, what in part poetry should be. Great, right?
Yeah, thank you.
And Jack, I know you already commented. Do you have anything else you wanted to say about this one? I know you already asked a question, but do you have anything else you wanted to comment about this poem before we move on?
I honestly don't want to sound redundant because it's just, I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss of words right now, and I'm not just saying that. I mean, I don't know. I don't really have anything else to say, but because I'll just be saying the same phrases.
That's okay, buddy. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
The next poem is up whenever you're ready, Spaceship Captain.
Yeah. You and she are glitter knots, hiding your fresh fucked faces behind hip magazines, feigning interest in 100-year-old houses. Face down on an antique couch, she growls your stage name into the grooves of the pink cushions, performative sighs rattling the exposed brick as she struggles to remember her line. And you'll smoke your boutique cigarettes after, staring into each other's empty eyes, telling yourselves you're not cardboard statues draped in velvet, convincing one another you aren't as hollow as the seashells on your bookshelf.
Another great ending. Pam, you are up first on this one.
All right. Wonderful read there. Yeah, I really like how, first of all, you right away throw out the F word within the first two sentences so that you catch so that you catch the anger, the contempt. That's the word. This is a poem that so perfectly expresses contempt. And I like how you're taking a look. Like, it could feel like it's about two people that someone actually knows, or it could be just about, in general, the idea of people who are shallow, who are empty, who want to put on that show, the kind of people that have rows and rows of books that they never read, but just simply to make themselves look intelligent. I don't have a specific question about this poem, but I will ask you, what was it that, like, got you into writing poetry?
That's a great question. So for as long as I can remember, I really loved writing. I started out writing fiction when I was very young, probably 9 or 10 years old. I would write stories. When I got into college, I wanted to be able to tell stories in a shorter format and I wanted to be able to tell 1,000 stories in my lifetime. And so writing poetry just became this way that I could kind of drop these sucker punch stories in the heat of the moment as I was feeling them. You know, you can't sit down and write a novella. I mean, I guess some people can in an afternoon, but for me it was, this is the story of how I'm feeling right now, and I can tell it in 16 lines. And so that's kind of what got me into it. As far as, I mean, I don't know if you actually asked what the inspiration for this poem is, but I am happy to elaborate.
Oh, go right ahead. I love elaboration.
So another thing that I try to employ in my storytelling and in my poetry is the titles of the poems are intrinsically linked to the content of the poem, even if it doesn't seem that way. So the title of this one, Dumpy Yuppies and Hush Puppies, obviously it rhymes and it's funny and cute or whatever, but it's actually a commentary on the poem itself, which was inspired by my recent move to Nashville. And this is kind of about these, you know, young, yuppie hipster couples that I would see that would stumble into town with way too much money and, you know, kind of act like they knew everything about everything and that they were real locals because they'd been here for 5 years. And so, you know, for me, an important part of what the whole feeling of the poem is the precedent that I try to set with how I name them. You know, I want you to, in my mind, when I write a poem, I want you to read the title and read the poem and then have your eyes drawn back up to the title again and go, ah. So that's sort of that's how I would like for my word to be consumed. I don't know if it always is, but that's the idea that I have in mind whenever I write them. And sometimes that's embellished in the author's notes on all poetry, and sometimes it's not. But yeah, that's the long story, longer version of the answer to the question that you asked.
Very cool.
And I like that. I think it works. I like the fact that you want it to be framed with the title and the importance of the title. And when I read this, I knew that you were poking fun, but you're poking fun in such a fun way that I wouldn't think that anyone would take offense to. I mean, it's Dumpy Yuppies and Hush Puppies. I mean, you can't be offended by it, whoever you are, especially when the first line has glitter knots in it. I mean, you can't. But my question when reading it is, I've written stuff before, and then I've seen comments go a certain way in the comments down below after, and I realized that someone took something that I wrote and totally out of context or totally different direction. And I've even scared myself before where I've written something and then go, wait a minute, this could really hurt or offend or get to somebody in a way that I have no intention at all of doing. So the softball question is, when you write, are you ever thinking about your audience's reactions to any of this? Are you worried about what they might think, or are you just being you and letting it all fly?
I think it would be naive to say that anyone that writes poetry is wholly unconcerned with how they'll be perceived when they share it. But as to whether or not it's perceived the way that, you know, I intended it, it doesn't really bother me when it's misconstrued or misinterpreted. I think the great thing about poetry and writing in general is that it's a relationship between the writer and the reader, and in that way it's something that's greater than ourselves. You know, I think I know what I'm talking about when I write something, and maybe it means something completely different to someone else, and maybe they're more right about it than I am. You know, maybe they really know what I was trying to say. I think I think sometimes I'll read a comment below something that I write and I'll go, huh, yeah, maybe that is what I meant. You know, I think we have to humble ourselves to the audience, but not, you know, cater to the peanut gallery either.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. I love that. Jack, you're up. What do you think?
I thought the pacing, especially with this film, like reading it, I liked how long lines go faster. So that's in the notice, but totally, you really, I struggle with pacing and like how to like slow down at certain times and speed up at times, but I'm really impressed by how you slow down and speed up. And because it emphasizes like the most important words. And I was just impressed by that the most. And I also had one more question, but I forgot what it was, so I'll have to think about it.
No worries. Britt, what do you think about this poem?
Y'all said everything I wanted to say, and y'all said it so much smarter than I could have said it. Thanks for that. Everything I enjoy about your work is displayed in every piece that you've read so far. And you guys took all my smarty pants comments. So fresh book faces is probably my favorite word triplet ever. It's elevator out of order and then fresh book faces. That's it.
What about out of order elevator?
No, out of order elevator and elevator out of order are those are the top, but they're not trios. Fresh book faces is tops.
Thank you.
Great comments, guys. Whenever you're ready, Skinny Latte Eyes is up for you.
All right. An adder curls in my throat as I'm watering my plants, and something about this midday sun recollects a time I think I've only imagined. And I've tried prayers and meditations and crystals and libations, but steadfast are the midnight phone calls and the pushback return flight dates. And you move through this city like a ghost. Bathroom mirrors telling the story of when you made those dives at Grand Cathedral. This was skinny, though. An infatuation with a muse that bloomed into a damned deceit. And nights spent on our knees, tiptoeing our way around words like love. Oh, you'd open a thesaurus to avoid that one. Gripping the edges of the rink and knocking your knees together like it's your first time on skates. I pin stories that aren't precisely true. A twisted narrative I found in a haunted house and dreams of your hands under my blouse, and I'm damn sure a repeat offender when it comes to making men into marble statues. I don't mean the Gorgon eyes. I mean, I know we're both stone, but I, listen, look. I found real love in a Best Western, and it was aromantic and fuckless, the way I think love must ought to be true and unburdened by lust or any old thing. And it was windy and drenched me like a summer rain. And I learned that not every word that falls out of the mouth of a lost young man is gospel, but that there's a truth to be found in the skinny latte eyes and the skinny lot of lies. And there's a taste of you in this destroyed notebook full of half thoughts. And you hang around this town, the lingering flavor of bacon grease in a skillet I didn't scrub.
What a great poem. And what I really like is it's reminiscent, it's autobiographical, all the things I've said before. But what you did is in telling the story, what was really, really impactful for me, for what I really loved, is the second to last, when you did that little play in Skinny Latte Eyes, the Skinny Lot of Lies. It was like you kind of – it was a little daydream almost in the middle of the story, if that makes sense. So it was like you were telling the story, you were telling something that was very personable, personal about what's happened in your life, if you take a lot of the metaphor and you see what's unfolding. But I like that little special daydream moment. That really took it away to another level for me. It was like, you know, it was honesty. It was taking it to that whole new level of honesty of saying, hey, look, here's my story, and you know what? This is kind of what's taken my mind as well. So I kind of like that little conversation piece that you put into it. I really enjoyed this ride.
Thank you.
Jack, what do you have for comments?
I especially liked the pacing. I know I already said the pacing, but I have multiple. This is by far one of my favorite old poetry poems, and I've read a lot considering how I was guest and used to post a crap ton. But one of my favorite lines, if I can scroll down to find it, was, or I should say stanza, "And you move through the city like a ghost. Bathroom mirrors telling the story of when you made it, those dives, a grand cathedral." And then this was Jenny, and just that line really stuck with me. The made those dives at Grand Cathedral in the bathroom mirror telling the story. So I like the personification. It's not too heavy, as you said, Chloe, you were worried about things being too heavy. None of your poetry feels too heavy. It feels just the right amount of different devices. And I'm a big fan of personification, and you need personification using, you know, like, other images other than, like, the sun, the moon, and other images other than that. And I especially liked the bathroom mirrors because it kind of gives off a haunting vibe to it. And at least that's how I perceived it. And, yeah, I was just blown away by the personification especially.
Thank you. That's a great comment.
Brittany, what do you have to say?
Maybe I'm pulling this out of my... out of my patootie, I don't know. But the aromantic and fuckless with the lingering flavor of bacon grease in a skillet I didn't scrub, those are identical lines to me. And I enjoy that there's a flavor in both of those, aromantic and fuckless. If I had to choose, like, favorite word pairings, aromantic and fuckless also is in strong contention for favorite shapes my mouth has ever taken. But the flavor of bacon grease in a skillet I didn't scrub. I love that combination.
Thank you.
Great comment. Pam, what do you have to say?
Yeah, this is a wonderful poem. I thought the use of the metaphors and imagery was brilliant. I like how, to me, it speaks on the idea of a past relationship that you learn so much. And, you know, I can't quite pinpoint if the person actually lives in the town or it's just the idea that of seeing them all over the place, even though they're not physically there. But I think either way works really great because, you know, it just kind of feels like an obsession, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but the idea of having trouble letting go in your mind, how the narratives just keep playing over and over again. I really like, and I'm damn sure a repeat offender when it comes to making men into marble statues. I don't mean the Gorgon eyes. I mean, I know we're both stoned, but I listen. Look, I found real love in a Best Western, and it was aromatic and fuckless the way I think love ought to be true and unburdened by lust. I like the whole look at the idea of love being something raw and gritty and not this pretty little package wrapped up in a bowl. So really great write and very well done.
Thank you. And can I just say you're so perceptive, because without me elucidating what any of these poems are about, you're on it and you're in the right direction, having not spoken with me before, which I really love that. You do get in there and kind of discern the meaning very well. So my compliments to you as the reader, actually.
Well,
so very perceptive.
We probably have time to sneak in one more. Would you like to do the next one on the list, which is La Petite Morte, or would you like to go to Pursed Lips to end?
That's a tough choice. You know what? We'll do Pursed Lips because La Petite Morte is a little, it's within the theme of the rest of the poems, but I'd like to deviate a little bit for flavor.
All right. It's up and ready when you are.
Yes, we'll do Pursed Lips. Okay. It's somewhere mixed in with the sticky, disintegrating contents of my purse. That bastard love you taught me. That's better than nothing but faking it till you taught me that summer. Broken pin, band-aid, touching your arm above the elbow, a pair of splintering chopsticks, a pharmacy coupon, drawing your lip between my teeth, playing pretend but not for the sake of deceit, a pulverized first aid kit, fuck, calling you at 1 a.m. and ignoring your gaze and fighting your grin and playing like I'm letting you in, and God, it's all so sticky and there's crumbs from some other love undone. It's all mixed in, and Christ, the shame of spilling it all on the floor, that cascade of lip balm and cherry bomb sunset summers. You undid my buttons in the backseat. God, where I learned to bleed and not let on, hiding scraped knees and heartache and tampons and prayers. The bastard thing I learned, coming apart and acting unburdened, and I haul it around in this carpet bag like all this sticky, crummy shit that I don't need anymore.
Great read. Okay, Jack, you're up.
All right, two things. I'm wondering how the hell I'm going to follow this up. Guys, that was incredible. And also, I really noticed the contrast between, like, the sticky and crummy and, you know, kind of a disorganized thing. And then it's contrasted by the word prayer. And prayer seems, like, smooth and, you know, prayer seems, like, neat because you're in, when you go to church, you just quiet and it's all, like, neat and you're tidied into rows and stuff. And I think that's what drives a lot of good poetry. The conflicts, or the tension, I should say. Maybe tension is a better word. But the tension between certain words, connotations, like I said, like prayer and crumbs. And I really like how you did that in this poem a lot. I mean, it just elevated it to a whole nother level. Not that your poetry needed to be elevated, but it elevated it to another level. So, yeah, that's my comment.
Thank you.
Brittany, what do you have to add?
I have nothing constructive. My favorite thing.
Add constructive comments.
The opposite of constructive. Did I mention I've been drinking since 2? Good. That everything, that stanzas are a big deal to me, shape the stanzas, and the only, the four words that are left on their own, God, Christ, and prayers. They're such sticking points. Like if you were falling downstairs, that these would be your landing points. These would be those quick little rolls on that before you descend your second flight. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, and it makes the poem so much better.
I agree. Those are my favorite things, and you're so good at them.
Thank you so much. That's such good imagery, actually, that I haven't thought about, is falling down the stairs. But it's definitely, well, Brittany, you know, the rest of you won't know this. Brittany will know that I fall down it as a person probably once or twice a week. I fall down constantly like Mr. Bean. So I'm sure that comes through in my work somewhat. But this poem was actually...
Your crusade against gravity is inspiring.
this poem was actually inspired by me spilling my gigantic tote bag completely out on the floor inside of a Chili's while I was having margaritas with some of my friends. It was sitting in my lap, and all of my shit fell onto the floor. And I just kind of sat there while my purse just continued, like, emptying out for, like, an inappropriate and comically long duration of time. And my friend just looked at me and was like, "Was that your purse?" And I was like, "Yep." So it was kind of inspired by the shame of all of my personal affects being strewn about the floors of a Chili's, and how, I guess, to me, I feel like poetry in that way is the way that my personal thoughts are strewn about the floor of the proverbial Chili's that the internet is. And the those who inspired the poetry are the catalysts for that chaotic disaster, I guess.
I really like that. Pam, would you like to close comments?
Oh, absolutely. I'd be happy to. First of all, it was great to be able to meet you. This is an amazing poem. It's got great imagery and metaphors. I actually had to put it on my Poems I Think Are Awesome list. I think this is wonderful all the way through, and I liked hearing your backstory about it. It made me think about, and I don't know if you've ever seen this, but there's this SNL skit where it's basically like a commercial for, you know, hiding your tampons. Now you can pull anything out of your purse that you'd rather have people see besides tampons. It's like, you know, tampon hidden inside a piece of dog shit. Tampon hidden inside a dead rat. But, you know, and that's the part I'm going to focus on, where you did mention the idea, the shame of spilling all on the floor, that cascade of lip balm and cherry bomb sunsets, and then you say, you undid my buttons in the back seat. That whole stanza, and you mentioned the hiding of the tampons, and I really like that part. First of all, and I'm going to hyper-focus on this one part, because I am a huge believer that people hide menstruation away from poetry way too damn much, you know? And as women, we hide ourselves too much. We want to be beautiful and perfect and Miss Congeniality, but, you know, we hurt, we love, and God freaking damn it, we bleed. So,
yes,
you know, I just think this is an amazing write and very well done.
Thank you. That line I wrote and rewrote several times because I had workshopped this to a couple of friends and they were like, I don't get the tampons thing. And I was like, okay, well, you know, the scraped knees and the heartache and the tampons are symbolic of three different types of bleeding that we all learn how to do in adolescence and, you know, keep a stiff upper lip about it. You know, I've fallen down and scraped my knee when I'm 6 years old and I learned how to not cry about it. And then I, you know, experience my first heartache when I'm 10 or 11 years old and I learn how to not cry about it. You know, then I get my period when I'm 13 and I learn how to not cry about it. And it's kind of a story of how as women we, it's just the next thing and then we learn how to not cry about it, you know, and that's what life is it's the next bleed and how do I learn how to not cry about it? And so that's kind of what the whole poem is about. But that line specifically, I intended to be, you know, this is what womanhood is. This is what adolescence is. This is what truly, you know, coming of age is learning how to bleed and not let on. That's what that line means. So I'm glad you got onto that.
I'm hiding underneath the couch cushions during all this, guys. Excellent poem. Excellent read. Excellent read. Her name is Spaceship Captain. We didn't get to her entire set list. I encourage everyone to check her out here on All Poetry. Chloe, thank you so much for being a wonderful headliner. I enjoyed very much learning more about your poetry tonight, and I will enjoy reading more of it in the future.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I'm truly humbled and honored.
Well, you did a wonderful job. And with that, we have our next headliner, Jack Otterberg. Jack, you ready to do this?
Yes, sir, I am, and I am humbled and honored.
Well, your first poem is on the reader board, so whenever you're ready, Dream in Which I Am Loved.
Oh, boy, it's going to be a long one. All right.
It's all right. You do you.
All right. Dream in Which I Am Loved. So passionately, even the chicken nuggets in my stomach curl their teeth. Even digging weeds off the mulch is a dance. Dream this. We're 19, blasting indie songs out the pumped-up speakers of my Ford Explorer. Mom car, I know. when you look at me, and you're looking at me, as an act of splitting from a tyrannical country. No, a secession from reality, such that my blood spins when I feel past your irises, walk inside your retinas, write poems on your cornea's walls. The ink I've stocked in my bones screeches for your tongue. And I kiss you with all love poems and that's not real. I don't know who you are. I wrote so many letters to your heir, whose fit body, dressed in black, should have warned me. I scribbled faux elegies on soda-stained papers, all about you. I've romanticized the dead. You can't blame me. They stitch my lips shut when I fall asleep. They've nursed my fevers and peeled my limp skin. Point is, they tended to me when you weren't here. You're never here. Just saunter across my daydreams. Your feet lilac white, your hair glowing, your breasts, well, I don't want to sexualize. But your body only sits in my head, smiling there, refusing to exit my brain's box. Why can't the dream of you sprout into flesh and spirits? Why is it sleep coddles you when by day you're only a ghost's voice? I'm sorry. I'm famished for your hands. They crawl up my arms and wrap around my shoulders. I'm losing hope. I don't want to bow to that cliche, but lucidity is needed here. I'm glaring at a flickering streetlight. Its tinfoil mouth opens and closes, opens and closes. I want to walk inside its lips, feel its breath pulsate on my skin. But such things aren't meant for me. I have surrendered the stream. I'm cocooning myself in solitude shell. Don't wake me. It's too cold in here to be sad. That's it.
Great read. Brittany, would you like to start us off with comments?
Jack, are you listening very closely?
Yes.
It's important because I'll only say this 10 more times. There's nobody on All Poetry doing what you're doing. And I'm saying that, and I need you to hear that. And that's not because I've been drinking since 2 o'clock. Nobody doing what you're doing. And what you're doing is you're knocking these out of the park. And it's this incredible combination of things. It's not just the imagery. It's not just the conversational tone. It's not just that it's so easy to walk with these words and feel them and taste them and see them, that you're doing like 4 or 5 of these a day and none of them suck. Nobody's doing this, Jack. So I need you to know, I need you to not think, but believe this is part of what you're doing. Okay.
No pressure.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much.
You're the weird one. I need you to know that.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Just don't let it go to your head. Don't even think about it. No pressure.
It appears to be a default setting.
I can't even pretend to understand that. No, it's outstanding. I've been reading you now. I don't even know how long, but it's every single work that I've read of you has this characteristic where you there's so many pleasant experiences being lit up all at once. It's not just any one singular thing. You're not just appealing to one sense. You appear to cover all of it every time. So good on you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Wow, I'm humbled. And I just want to say I'm currently in Hawaii in a hotel right now, so I do apologize if it's noisy. So that's just a disclaimer. But I'm
we can't
by that.
Luau
that was
sick or anything, so you're good.
If you want to call in from a luau, buddy, that's fine. We can't hear anything. We appreciate your poetry. Chloe, are you still with us?
Here on Friday.
I'm here.
Would you like to comment on this poem?
Yeah. I think there's kind of to piggyback off of what Britt said, there's so much going on here in form of tone. So much of it is very from a form of innocence, and yet there's sort of a
underlying longing and sensuality to it. And to me, and I could be pulling this out of my ass, pardon my French, it's late and I've imbibed here. But there's what it speaks to me is sort of when you are taken with the potential of what we think someone could be or what someone could be to us, and then are confronted by the reality of who they are to us or who they truly are. So I think so many times as people, we fall in love with the idea of who someone is and not the reality of who someone is, or maybe the idea of what they could be to us and not the reality of what they are to us. And so that's how I read this poem is, you know, I'm in love with what I think this could be, but, you know, in reality, it's something else. Kind of where you know, I've surrendered to this dream. I'm cocooning myself in solitude shell. To me, that's, you know, okay, well, this isn't what I want it to be, so I'm going to keep it at arm's length and step away from it. But yeah, overall. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, that was perfect interpretation. That was exactly what I was going on.
Yeah, and I've written, you know, I think I see it because I have written it. but yeah, I think what you've done is kind of take what is a nebulous feeling or idea and really put pen to paper for what this strange, you know, almost naive, wistful longing is. And in some ways it feels like nostalgia for something that's never happened. Really good write. Really, really good way to condense a vague, ephemeral feeling and make it tangible and tasteable.
Wow, thank you. I never thought of it that way at all. I just wrote four words out and then like, oh, I'll get this, and I was like, oh, that sounds good. That was, but yes, I did.
He's the Babe Ruth of lovelorn poetry.
Dude, I'm saying, I'm going to make t-shirts that say I fucking know it.
Pam, what are your comments?
Well, first of all, I really like what everybody has to say. And I'm really glad to be able to be introduced to your poetry, Jack, through Jeremy. And, you know, I do have to ask out of curiosity before I continue with my comment is, now, did this end up auto-ranking 10?
No. I was just memeing a little bit. Just like, I like to say I'm memeing. I'm messing around. I'm a bit of a goofy guy, so I like to just like, oh, I'm going to spam. It's all I did to auto-rank 10. But that, no, it didn't. It's all I did to 3, but then I realized, you know, it's not the most important thing to do 10 and auto-rank. That's just, I mean, it helps,
oh, goodness,
but
no.
It's not the most important thing.
I think Kevin and I should fight. I don't know who can arrange that, but tell him I said to meet me after class, and we'll fight about it, about what deserves an auto-rank 10.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
Oh, a drip match. I pay real money to see that, actually.
I like that. But yeah, no, this is a wonderful.
Sorry, I can't hear anything.
Is anybody else having trouble? Are people breaking up to anybody else, or is it just me?
It sounds like everybody's dropping in it.
Oh, okay. Oh, as
yeah,
long as it's not just me. Okay. Hopefully that'll adjust itself. But, yeah, I really like this all the way through. Wonderful, you know, imagery and metaphors. I was particularly drawn to, I think this kind of brought up the lines, I've romanticized the dead. And the reason I like that and the whole feel of the poem is because whether it's talking about past relationships or love that never was, or even people who actually literally die, You know, there's oftentimes all of a sudden everything that we hated about a person disappears when they're no longer part of our life. Everything they did to hurt us disappears when they are no longer a part of our life. Now, when I read through your poetry earlier today, Jack, your set list, I did notice that quite a bit of your pieces were longer pieces, which is absolutely fine because, well, you have such interesting poetry that you can pull off longer. I was wondering, are you an editor? Like, do you write a piece and go back and edit, or do you, you know, just basically say, okay, this is what came out and this is the word count it's staying at? And so,
I would like to describe myself. Well, I don't know if I'd like to destroy myself with this, but I'd say I'm a lazy poet in terms of I need to revise more, I'd say. So I don't really revise often. I just pour it out and let it be, which is a different philosophy, but sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't. I just don't know. Like, I'm trying to find that middle ground where, like, okay, maybe I could switch this around, or maybe I could leave this be. But usually I don't revise, no.
Okay, cool.
And I think it works. I mean, you definitely have a fan base in the show tonight, so keep doing what you're doing because you have people loving what you're putting together. What I liked about this
one, thank you.
I don't know how else to describe it other than to say that the language in this, as the poem progresses, kind of it melts. It kind of slumps down into this. It's the love and it's the lost love, and you can feel that in the words that you put together and the word choices you made. I mean, there was some kind of subtext going on in here that I really felt this sense of self. It's not self-deprecating. It's just this self-worth that you felt through another person, and I felt that sinking feeling, that melting feeling throughout. And as a side note, the Ford Explorer, there was a day, buddy, in which I got to drive the Ford Explorer, and that was the coolest car on the road. So now I'll date myself that way. the same kind of question that I asked Chloe earlier, when you're doing this, and I think Pam kind of just hit on it with her question too about the editing, but when you find your muse, when you're doing this, again, how much of this are you taking as true autobiographical elaboration, or is this 100% imagined poetry?
I'd say it's 50% real, 50% bullshit, but that's how I like to describe it. Or maybe I'll do, I thought of it because it was kind of an interesting thing that I had a conversation with my mom about it, like how poems, she told me to write what I know, and I'm like, yeah, I agree with that to a certain extent, but like, here's how I view it. In a more broader sense, like a broad frame of the poem itself, I like to, sorry if I'm echoing here, I'm in my sister is in the other room, so I'm just in the bathroom here, but what was I saying? I like to think of the frame, like what it's about, it's broad, and like that's the true part, but then like the more specific details, I can like say it's just more imaginary and like take more liberties at. So that's how I think of it. I don't know if that aligns with all of my poems, but that's just how I thought of it today. So, yeah.
That works. That's a great answer. We are ready for your next one when you are.
All right. Where am I? Okay. Oh, I got it. This one is called... Oh, I love this title. This one's called Man Talks to a Ghost in the McDonald's Bathroom. I tried to write it as a prosy story poem, and I based it off this other poem I read. It's like a very long title about the Titanic, and it's a contemporary poem. It's kind of a spoken word poem. I don't remember who it's by, but this woman has a conversation with the Titanic about... like how her lover's leaving her or something. And I kind of set that frame. It's not about the same thing, but I kind of set that frame and replied it to here. So, man talks to a ghost in the McDonald's bathroom. 11:12 p.m. The touchscreen menu flickers on and off. I'm just hesitant to decide whether it'll bear light tonight. A shady man slurs his words as he chomps into his mixed double on the ice cream splattered table. Gets the wipes clean by human hands, but lit by a thirsty moonlight. The man's sweatshirt hood droops over his face as the speaker spits out cliched pop songs so he can celebrate this burger's taste with something so beautiful as Vue's narrative. The celebration halts with the last bite. He swept into a sour disappointment that propels his stomach to tap dance. He walks to the men's bathroom, the pale blue sign spelling EN, and the door swings open like a tree he saw at 7, falling backwards. I am the ghost the snake he stepped on in 9th grade, a voice booms, sounding more like a mouse's belly, dragging across the floor, than a thunderous omen. Really? The man replies in perplexity, his nice sharp eyes suddenly softened. I'm sorry, little dude. I didn't see you there. When you died, I wrote so long an elegy. The paper hollered at me to stop. My friends helped bury you. The sidelines of the freshman football field, the mud tangled on your scales. I thought I should have washed you off, but they said your body would be cleaned by the clouds. I looked up at the 5th grade clouds, and they nodded in unison. The sun then walked across their brows and carried your corpse up to them. It was calm in the sky's ocean, calmer than my ribcage, swelled the dead's voices, my eyes stabbed by my own inner snakes. I swear the winds froze statue still for a moment. The grass sat crisscrossed applesauce, and the car engine sounded like singing angels. Even rooftops wept when you were buried. Honestly, I'm blessed you didn't bite me. You were so kind. Holy crap, man, squeaked out. You're really that sorry? You did that all for me? Well, it felt natural. You know, when you see a mouse in the grass and you just can't help but lunge at it, so you'll feel guilty afterwards? Yes, I carry that burden on my tongue like a fork. Even my pelvis bones wiggled with guilt. Well, I spent my life weighing remorse, so not on a forked tongue. The man laughed his gut out. No, I carried it like spiders in my spirit, that deeply webbed. I try and air it out my bones at night, and the wind licks my window open. Those gusts just stir the pain up. Pain is a blessing to those who are blind enough to love it. Excuse me. You'll never escape it. It eats at you with guilt. But I think, dear snake, if you twist your eyes a certain way, you'll see guilt as a spirit forgiving itself. Wow, the ghost of the snake said. You really know how to slither your words around. But I think by now your bladder must be bawling. I'll let you use the restroom. Thank you, snake, the man replied. And the wind outside pounded street signs. The stoplights bowed to the Lord. While the moonlight smiled, she watched the conversation from her house. It was so beautiful. Their words glowed in the dark. And yeah, that's it.
Great read. Chloe, can you start us off?
Yeah. So one, I mean, this makes me, this is so relatable, and which is crazy, because it's a story about a ghost of a snake. But to me, it feels, I feel like everyone has felt this. And I think looking at it from a greater point of view is not just, you know, literally have we all maybe killed some small animal by mistake when we were young and felt guilty about it, but it is, it's the little guilt that we carry around that are like small deaths, I feel. And it particularly reminds me of a time when my younger brother was running around outside barefoot, and he rounded a corner and stepped on a frog, which exploded, and he was barefoot. And so, you know, the moment of horror on his face when he came around the corner, and we all went, oh, my God, did you just step on a frog, you know?
it kind of reminded me of that, because, you know, I think later in the night he was like, I'm really sad about stepping on that frog, you know, and I think it's, sometimes it takes us a moment to really sit with the things we've done and go, oh man, you know, that sucked. But I really like this. I really like a narrative, you know, prose type of poem. It really got me. Holy crap, man! The ghost squeaked out. You're really that sorry. That really makes me giggle, because it's so, you know, heavy and heady and emotional, and then if you're just taken out of it by the, oh man, dude, you know, it kind of takes you out of how dramatic it is for a moment. You kind of let the reader off the hook a little bit, and I think that kind of contrast is something I really enjoy in a work.
Well, thank you. I like to add humor where I can, because, like I said, I think of myself as a not that serious of a guy. It's not in a bad way, just a pretty goofy guy. So I like to add humor in poems where I can, but it's a fine line, I think. So I'm glad you appreciated it.
Great comment, Chloe. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Well, I definitely think this is epic storytelling with a great combination of drama and humor. I, too, was drawn to that part that says, I am the ghost of the snake you stepped on in ninth grade. And to me, it made me think of my story of killing a small animal is that, you know, one time when I was pulling my two youngest in a wagon, I ran over a frog, and for years, my youngest daughter, who was 3 at the time, would always bring that up. So, you know, now I'm imagining meeting the ghost of the frog I ran over with a radio flyer.
You meet that ghost every time your daughter brings it up, right? That's kind of what this poem
exactly is
to me.
That is a good point, exactly. But, yeah, I like how this is a combination of drama and humor. And to me, oftentimes I'm wrong, and I could be wrong, and that's all right. But the guilt that comes back in this, to me, it almost speaks to the idea of bullying, the idea that whether we were the bullied, or we were that person who watched someone being bullied and didn't do anything, you know, because oftentimes we look back at those times when we should have stepped up, or we could have stepped up, or maybe those times we treated somebody bad. And it just really reflects really well to me on the idea of looking back at our past and the things that we could have done differently. Just a really strong write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I hardly get to talk about this, my poetry love, so I appreciate this.
Yeah, no, man. Absolutely. That's what it's all about. We love being able to dive in deeper with poets that we love here on the site. So you're giving us great insight. And what I liked about it is I took it a little bit differently in that in the beginning, you take a very normal, everyday scene, a guy sitting in a late night, it's midnight, it's 11 o'clock at night, and he's sitting there eating a hamburger, and you make it poetic, the way you describe it. When there's ice cream on the table, and then it's the moon that's licking it up. I mean, you make everyday ordinary scenes, and you make them beautiful and interesting. And then we get into something that's totally absurd, and we're in the bathroom of a greasy Mac talking to a dead snake. and it's such a crazy scene. But then as soon as that snake comes in there and does something crazy, you go right back. You go right back to what the narrative voice is all about. He does something beautiful, and that he gives this dead snake this send-off. But the way you describe it, too, it was beautiful and poetic. I mean, I thought you could take that first where he's sitting there and make a poem, you could take his reply to this goofy snake, and that could be a poem. It was this yin and yang of taking something that's ordinary or absurd and then making it beautiful. And then that, for me, is where the love poem revealed itself in the very end. The piner, the gal that's seeing, watching from afar, finding something beautiful in an unsuspecting setting. And so, I don't know. I took it that way, in that there was much more of a dialogue than the one you were making there that was obvious about it. And I like that. And I'm wondering if you're looking for deeper symbolism. I know that how you described your process. Are you looking for deeper symbolism in your poetry when you're creating things like this?
Yes, definitely. I love – it just comes to me like – so when I write, it varies. Obviously, you know, creative process varies. Like if you take – sometimes I take 30 minutes to write a poem. Sometimes I take like 3 or 4 days to write like a really small poem. It's just the way it is. And, I tend to like – I like a stream of consciousness kind of thing. That's what I like to at least start out with. And then I get some recurring symbols, or I get like some images that I really like. And that's kind of how I get my symbols. And I try to like read over it and add it into different parts where I find more fitting or and things like that. So I just take it, I kind of write, and then I look back. So I guess in the way it is revision, but it's not like a vague revision. It's like a quick revision, and then I'm just like, all right, I need feedback, and I put it out there. But going back to symbolism, I write first, and then I look for symbols. Or I'm sometimes just accidentally that way. That's usually the two things that happen for me.
Either way, it works, man. It works well. Brittany, your comments.
Can I just point out the fact that I appreciate the fact that you're giving all this commentary from a bathroom? I think that's
yeah.
That's perfect. No, man, I so enjoy these really poignant lines that are dropped off with no ceremony whatsoever. Like, where is it? Sounding more like a mouse's belly dragging across the floor than a thunderous omen. Like, that's such a heavy... It's such a heavy line that's just, oh, by the way. Like, that's how a lot of your work feels, that these really powerful statements are just kind of tossed out like parade candy. And that's it's perplexing and it's amazing. And I hate to sound like I'm fangirling, and I don't know how many more you've got for you, but I have one more question. I like to kind of see what recurs in other people's work, and in yours, you appear to have an affinity for lilacs and grief, and I was wondering if you could expand on that.
Well, I can't expand on that, but sometimes I do like lilacs, but I have this particular memory that, like, ever since I saw it, it's kind of circling back to the first poem. The first poem was actually like kind of inspired by this girl I was talking to. And it didn't really work out well, just trying to screw things up, but we don't talk about that. But anyway, she was she was on the track team, and like she was taking photos of her friends by in front of these this hill over that had like purple lilacs at the top of it. And it just caught my mind. I'm like, oh, what are these? I think they're lilacs, at least that's what they were saying. I'm like, oh, that's a really beautiful scene. And it's really just one of those random images that kind of stick with me. So it's not like the most significant thing, but at the same time, it has a meaningful memory to it. That being the girl that I talked to. And as far as grief, I don't know, honestly. I like the word because you can play around with it a little bit. It's still heavy, but you can play around with it a little bit with like leaf and like sound and stuff like that, rhyme. But also, I see, like, different quotes about, like, grief, and, like, they talk about, like, how grief isn't always the things that, like, you lose, or the things, or it's, like, grief can be, like, the thing that you don't have that you really want, or, like, it doesn't have to be about death. It can be something else that you lose, And so I like to play around with both the sound aspect of that and, like, the overall connotation of the word Greek. And that's what I think. And then the lilacs. So, yeah, that's what I think.
Great question. Great answer to it, too, Jack. I appreciate that. I think we're ready for another one whenever you are, brother man. I set my alarm clock on the moon.
Oh, yeah. That's
you're already giggling. You're already giggling.
I just love these titles. I don't know how I came up with them. They just make me laugh. But anyway, brother, I set my alarm clock on the moon to see if I could prank the stars into waking in the morning. That's my entertainment nowadays. But they're too smart to abandon their camps when the sunlight rises. They just snore obnoxiously loud, like Mojo, his fat, adorable stomach, bucks up whenever his breath decides it's bored. Sometimes I act like his belly's a drum set. That black fur and white chest patch gets all frizzled as he oinks out a mixture of tomfoolery and annoyance. While Augie sneezes, his wrinkled furry face briefly curled back, he also snores. So yes, this choir keeps me up at night. Oh, and now someone's crying, but I could give you a star, though it'll probably melt when I mail it to you. The postal service is short-staffed nowadays, which is a shame. You could sew it into the world's greatest sweater. That reminds me, how's the clothing company going? I'm sorry, I'm trying to reconnect the years into one smooth line akin to your attempts with me, but I was, well, too ignorant to let love kill me. The same way your love touched teardrops out your eyes every night at Boys Town, while we visited weekly, and your mentor Ray taught me how to properly catch a football. The same way every day sails upon my tongue with a taste of sinister comfort. The same damn way your punching honesty hugged my eyes through the text message you sent me. I didn't think the truth could feel so light when it kills you. All right.
Great read. Pam, would you start us off with
comfort? Except for the baby crying.
That's all right. If you're making people cry with your reads, that's a positive. At least you're getting emotional. Pam, you want to start us off?
Absolutely. Wonderful read there. Again, I like how you bring us the everyday and how it relates to emotion. Do you have a pet pig or a guinea pig, I'm guessing?
I compared my dog to a pig because he's fat. But,
Okay.
Yeah, so
I
that
see.
Might be on that might sometimes I do get a little lost in clarity. So but yes, I compared my dog to a pig because I thought it'd be funny, he's just fat.
Oh, that is.
Oh.
Now that I get it, sorry. Sometimes I'm too literal. But I really like the use of the word tomfoolery. You know, there's just certain words that I feel need to be tossed out there more, and that is one of them. And combining it with annoyance because, you know, tomfoolery, it's so light, it's so, you know, having fun. And then there's this idea of, you know, obviously a you know, annoying people through our tomfoolery. But, you know, I really like this all the way through, and I really like how it's kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say sentimental, though there is something about it that is. So for lack of a better word, that's what I'll say. I really like the same way your love tug teardrops out your eyes every night at Boys Town while we visit weekly and your mentor Ray taught me how to properly catch a football the same way every day sails upon my tongue with the taste of sinister comfort. It's, you know, I like how you speak on the idea of how we can get too comfortable with life being a certain way and never venture out for change. And now, can you tell me how you got started with writing poetry?
Oh, how I started?
Yeah.
That's a good question. That's a very good question. So it's one of those, honestly, I was just bored, but like in a more in-depth answer, it was kind of an escape route for me because like when I was 13, I was like in like the hospital for like OCD and anxiety, and like I was just going through a rough time in my life. So I didn't have anything really to do, and I had like a lot of feelings stored up, so it's just a natural outlet for me. Of course, this is like, I'm 19 now, so 6 years ago, so I was nowhere where I wanted to be. I just started out. But yeah, that's where I started, and that's kind of why I started, just to be an outlet.
Very cool.
And I think what Pam touched on is true. I think why it's so relatable is because it felt like that early love that we've all experienced, and how you kick around where you want to end up, and it takes so long, and it's so painful, and you're so nervous. And this poem even does that. It starts at the beginning talking about something different, and then it finally starts to get to the feeling of the pining again for this object of affection. And it touches on all of these moments that are so raw that you don't talk about. You don't talk about who taught you how to properly catch a football. You just, as a guy, you don't want to deal with talking about any of this stuff. And the fact that you do, and I felt that nervousness, and it took me back to that time. It took me back to the time when I would dial the first 6 digits of her phone number before I would hang up real fast. I mean, it's that early love that just kills you because you want it so bad, but it's something so terrifying that you just look back on it and go, wow, what a goofy time of life. And that's what I found was so relatable to all of it. And that's why it just felt so incredibly, incredibly real. That's what I enjoyed most about it.
Thank you.
Britt, what are your comments?
I like that you're very reserved with your vulgarities, the same damn way you're punching honesty hugs my eyes through the text message. I can almost feel that you're sorry for using the word damn. Like, as soon as it comes off the lips, there's this immediate want to take it back. And maybe I'm just imagining that, but I like that it's not just strewn about. You're very purposeful when you do decide to curse.
Yeah. I'm not that way in real life, I'll tell you that.
Chloe, what can you contribute?
Kind of going off of that and going off of what I said earlier, there's this interesting juxtaposition of, you know, full innocence and at the same time this, you know, budding adolescent viewpoint where, you know, you're drumming on your dog's belly like a little kid would, you know, and you're hesitant to curse like a child might be, but you also have such a grown-up way about describing your environment and just your the way that you move about your environment and interact with it. I'm sorry, I'm trying to reconnect the years into one smooth line akin to your attempts with me. It's such a heavy and, you know, profound statement to come from somebody that's, you know, beating on their dog's belly and, oh, look at you, you little piggy, you know. And then I think there's that contrast that lives within all of us. But theme and this idea is pervasive throughout your work that is the tug of war between one's inner youthfulness and, you know, the inevitable march of time and our, you know, the losing of one's innocence, I think, is kind of something that, to me, I see a pervasiveness of it as an underlying theme that runs throughout your work that I've read.
Yeah. Yeah, I try. It's fitting for how I view life too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think it's really genuine and raw and honest in a way that a lot of people are afraid to be. So I really like that. I really think it's part of what makes your work so unique and profound.
Thank you.
And before we move on, Jack, can you tell us, is there anywhere else we can find your work? Would you like to do any shameless plugs about anything you might have out there that we could find? Or is All Poetry the best place to get in touch?
I'm only on All Poetry mainly. I mean, I do have an Instagram, I guess. But that's kind of like memes and poetry. I like to put like funny pictures and then just write serious poems. It's a good sense of irony. So if you're up for like just a goofy like poetry page mixed with memes, then yeah, I do have that. It's called Otterberg Writing, OTTERBERG. Oh yeah, you already have my name on there. You can spell it, but and then writing. Yeah, and I do have that, but that's about it. I am trying to go to the University of Iowa because you all probably know. They have a very, very, very good creative writing program. So I'll see what I'll do there.
Right on, man. Well, I don't think we're going to make, because your poems are so long, we're not going to make it much further. Is there a specific one that you would like to go next, or would you like me to go just down your list? I have If I Write Loud Enough, I Can Make the Flowers Bloom, or would you like something different?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'll try and hurry. I like this one because it's called Written for the Girl Bawling Outside Catherine. And I'll give you a little backstory, just a quick one, since we're running low. But Catherine, I went to University of Nebraska Lincoln, and I'm transferring to Iowa. And you know, they're big rivals, but okay, I'm doing sidetracks. But anyway, so Catherine is like a dining hall there, and it's just based on a time I saw a girl, like, crying outside while she was on the phone. So that's a bad story. But anyway, I'll read that one. Written for the girl bawling outside Catherine. I don't know you. Do you want me to read yet or no?
Yeah, no, you're good. If I write loud enough, I can make the flowers bloom in my heart. That's what I have up. Is that the right one?
Oh, no, I'm on Written for the Girl Bawling Outside Catherine, the second to last one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that. I'm sorry.
No, you're totally good. That's my bad.
All right. It is ready for you.
All right. Written for the girl bawling outside Catherine. I don't know you, but I figured you needed some comfort by the way you sobbed as you walked down the cement steps outside Catherine and hugged your face in your palms. February sunset just bursting, just stretching before heading to bed. While I glanced back at you, watching Spanish 102, I instantly regretted my decision to ignore you. But backed it up with logic, that common coin we used to cash off our remorse. Thought you didn't want a stranger to talk you into a temporary comfort. Because all comforts are just degradable masks. I can't pronounce that word for some reason. They sheath the problem from illumination, but the problem growls and scratches out. It always does. I headed to class, but your face is wilting makeup. Cemented its image in my brain. To the point I shut my eyes and saw your teardrops slithering down your cheeks. That guilt carried me, as it always does, this poem, the twisted advice I'm writing plainly. The universe acts with no logic, but if you look into its insanity, I have a slight feeling you'll find it beautiful. Life will box you in its cruel jests. It always will. Poke holes in the cardboard and laugh with it. And that's it.
Brittany, would you like to comment?
Yeah, and I'm happy that we're ending on this one. This is another one of those classic, I feel, examples of the poet brain, where you see this thing that lasts all of 10 seconds, and your brain immediately begins to write the poem as you're looking at it, and in lieu of perhaps immediate action where you
feel like maybe you should have approached this girl, but you're busy. You're busy writing the poem now. I appreciate that feeling and that you're at least able to do this woman, whether she's real or imaginary, justice in this work.
Thank you.
I love that. I love that comment, Brett. I like the poet brain comment. That's really cool. Chloe, what do you got?
Yeah, same thing. I feel like this is, this is a snapshot of a moment that's been, instead of a photograph, it's like a Monet, right? You're painting it in these broad, beautiful, bright strokes, and it's one tiny second of a thing that you've just created this beautiful vignette of what it really is, and making the mountains out of molehills and then making them back into molehills is something that you're so good at, is you take these tiny moments and you make them these grandiose things, and then you kind of bring it back to, at the end of it, she's just a girl crying outside of Cather, but you've painted her as the Mona Lisa, and I think it's great. And as to what Britt said, it's very much the poet brain thing where it's, oh, I'm seeing this thing and I'm experiencing it like it's a 2-hour movie, and it's 8 seconds of a thing that I saw as I was walking by on the sidewalk, it's so fascinating to me. And I love the way that you've painted this picture here.
Thank you. I'm humbled. Humbled. That's the word.
Great comments, Chloe. And then Pam, what do you have to say?
Oh, this is another amazing write. I think we've all heard before the saying, "the write what you know." And I think to me, that's what you've done here. You've taken a snapshot of your life, a snapshot of, a daily life. And the idea, you write to me on the idea of empathy and the way we can observe people's body language and learn so much about them without actually having to speak to them. So it's a very observational poem, and I like how it was described as a snapshot. And I really liked this all the way through. I thought it was wonderfully written, but I particularly like, I headed to class, but your face's wilting makeup cemented its image in my brain to the point I shut my eyes and saw your teardrops slithering down your cheeks. Wonderful lines there, and very well done.
Thank you.
And what you guys have all mentioned, and I think it's true, I think what Jack did on this one is he took something that's a very passive moment and made it beautiful. And by doing that, Jack, it stays with you. Because of your mind and the way you're able to capture this, something that you might appreciate for a moment and then forget a week later, you've now kind of immortalized. And so I think that's really cool. I think it's cool how all my predecessors have fawned over this poem for that very reason. And I think it's a really cool way of looking at life, and kind of writing your own biography in a way. So I very much appreciate you guys taking the time, Jack. Thank you for sharing your work. You were an excellent, excellent highlight headliner for us tonight. I think you did a wonderful job of performing your work. Again, this is another poem, everyone, or another poet, everyone, that we didn't get a chance to get through his entire set list. So please check out our topic on the board and enjoy more of Jack Otterberg's work. He is a very gifted poet, and he's worth the time. Thank you very much also, again, to Spaceship Captain. She was with us all night. She did some wonderful performances as well. And thank you for Brittany and, of course, my co-host Pam for commenting and sitting in with us tonight. You guys did a great job, and I think it was a very enjoyable show, and I look forward to enjoying more of your work in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that means a lot.
Yeah.
So happy
well, good night,
able to be here.
Yeah, absolutely.